I'm your guest host, Michael Kernodle, and we have a treat today. We have Professor Brandon Robertson, and the topic is how to develop a tune journal. So just want to remind everyone as you come in that you're going to be muted, but if you have any questions, you can go down there to the chat feature and just type in your questions, and we'll try to allow some time at the end for our educator to answer any questions. But before we go any further, we want to remind you there's more free upcoming sessions. You can find it on our website, www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. Also, if you have any future suggestion topics, you can always email us over there at info@clearwaterjazz.com. And we want to thank our sponsors today. For our first sponsors, we want to thank Blue Water Wealth Management at Stewart Partners and Duke Energy, as well as you can check out our Young Lions podcast wherever you stream. And that's brought to you by our friends over there at Marine Max Clearwater. And you can just search Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions wherever you stream. So where do I begin? Professor Brandon Robertson, some of his past sessions, I know if you've been with us, you've really enjoyed them. Here's a few, just the name. How to Develop Melodic Bass Lines. That was an awesome one. Playing Duo Performances. How about this one? Practice for 2 hours. Are transcripts worth it? I mean, and the list goes on and on. He has a catalog of things that he's done right here at the Clearwater Jazz Young Lions podcast here. But before we go on, I want to tell you a little bit about Brandon Robertson. He is an Emmy-nominated music director, professional upright electric bassist, composer, and music educator, originally from Tampa, Florida. As you see, he has a Florida State shirt on today. Why is that? Because he completed his Bachelor of Arts in Music from Florida State University in 2009 and a Master's of Music and Jazz Studies in the spring of 2016. You can currently catch him down there at Florida Gulf Coast University. He is the Director of Jazz Studies and a Director of the Basketball Band down there in Fort Myers. I know he's doing some great things. If you didn't know, he was nominated for Emmy in 2018. You can catch him on some of the greatest stages across the world. Some of the people he's performed with, I mean, just a few names. The world famous Count Basie Orchestra led by Scotty Barnhart. I don't think we need to say anybody else, but how about vocalist Carmen Bradford, Jason Marcellus, Marty Morrell, Wyclef Gordon. I mean, I think the list speaks for itself. So, without any further ado, I'm going to hand it over to the professor. Professor, guess what? The stage is all yours.
Man, that's the best tagline you ever have, man. Every time you do intros, for not just me, for anybody, I like when you set that up. The stage is all yours. Love it, man. So, I want to go ahead and speak, first of all, on something that y'all see right here on this screen. It is not orchestra. There is a T and an E. It's the PowerPoint is blown up because I'm looking at it on my screen. I can see the full word, but for some reason on the screen, it's only showing orchestra. So I just wanted to correct that right off the bat. And don't y'all get into it. The professor don't know how to spell. That ain't the case. But what we're going to talk about today, because I want to jump right into it, because there's kind of a lot to cover and I don't want to waste time here. So thank you, Michael, for the wonderful introduction and to the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation. You all know your family, and I always appreciate when I get the chance and the opportunity to drop some knowledge to our youth. So what we're going to discuss today is how to orchestrate a tune journal. Now, the tune journal concept was introduced to me by my wonderful, great teacher, Rodney Jordan, at Florida State University. He was my jazz studies, jazz bass professor, and he had us do this when we were in undergrad. Now, what I'm going to talk to you about is just some concepts that I learned from the tune journal and what helped me, what actually helped me, and the things that I actually did and what worked. And it actually worked. Like I'm telling you, worked, because I'd make my students do it and it works for them. So I'm not gonna hog that knowledge for you all. So I figured, hey, why not share it, okay? So we're gonna go over some steps on how to organize, prepare, and retain a tune journal to where by the end of, let's say, high school or in college, give a folder about that thick of just tunes that you just worked out. Now, what happens is that that process that you do to learn a song, you start to do this. It compresses to where you have so much information that you can retain. That's why I put at the very end how to retain a tune journal, to where you retain all those concepts, all those extra, all that information, to where you can get on a gig and cats will start calling tunes, and within a couple of seconds or maybe one chorus through, you got this whole song down if you didn't know it, because you've gone through a process. So I'm going to show you the beginning stage. This is what we call the trenches. You got to go through the trenches first, okay? So let's move forward. Now, section one. Now, you want to get a divider, a three-ring binder, okay, with pockets. You want to get some dividers, color-coordinated dividers, so that way you can kind of have different sections layered off and they're not all looking the same. You want clear dividers, so that way you can actually see in the front of each section what's happening. I always like to start with a title page, so I tell most of my students, you want to have a title page. Put a title page in front of each of these sections. I label them as section 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. Each section has information. So every tune that you do, you're inserting into each section the process, okay? So first, you want to start with the title of the song, okay? You want to make sure you have the correct title of the tune. Make sure you know that it's not a nickname of the tune or something that somebody abbreviated. You want to know the exact title of the tune that you're learning, okay? Number two, write down the original key signature of that tune. Not the real book key signature, not the one that gives you a default and tells you, well, this is what people practice it. No. Find the closest original recording of that tune. And more than likely, you will find that that have that key signature. Also, there's manuscripts of the old musical scores, and you can see what key signature some of these original standards were pulled from out of these musicals and what key they were in. So it's very important to know the original key of a song, because more than likely, in most cases, you're gonna play a song in its original key. Sometimes, which for instance, if you're playing with a vocalist may not sing the song in the original key because that vocalist range may not fit that key signature. So they may sing it up a whole step or down a whole step, or you know, whatever the case may be. So it's always good to know to write down the usual keys of the song that you're learning, or etc., all the songs that you're learning. Then you want to have notable arrangements / recordings of the tunes that you're learning. So I'm gonna start with that first one, notable arrangements. Now, when we talk about recording, it's always best that if you can find the original, its original content, the original recording of that tune, start with that recording, okay? Don't matter how old it is, all right? Because remember, when it was recorded in that time period, it sounded brand spanking new. So just because right now in 2021, it may feel outdated, the style and the historical content of where it pulled from and where it led to now, you have to understand that. So this is why knowing the original recordings matters. So in your tune journal, you want to write in that third section, in section one, you want to write on whatever, you know, whatever tune you're starting off with. Write down any notable arrangements that you like. So don't just find like, okay, I gotta go based off what people tell me. Do some research on your own, okay? You gotta put in some work. So sometimes it takes, now that we're in 2021, all it takes is the drop of a dime for you to pick up your phone, go to YouTube, type in, if you're working on Autumn Leaves, recordings of Autumn Leaves, and you're gonna get 1,000 recordings of Autumn Leaves. And then you sit there and you go through some of them, and then you find an arrangement of the song that you like. And you're like, wow, I like this arrangement. Okay, write that arrangement down. Okay, because there might be elements within that particular arrangement that you can actually extract information from. Okay, now the recording side of it, aside from writing down the recordings, you also want to write down the composer, the original composer of the chart. Because some of these tunes that you might pull from jazz recordings were not written by jazz musicians. They were written during the Tin Pan Alley era, which a lot of these musicals had tunes that eventually turned into jazz standards. So when you're talking about recordings, please note that when you're writing down the information, write down the correct information, okay? So if you're writing down a tune that was not written by a jazz musician, you need to go and find who that composer was, okay? Also, it's important to know the recording that you're listening to. You need to know the players that are also on that recording. So make sure that you write down the personnel who is on that recording. You don't need to go as far as writing down the track list. All you need to do is write down the name of the song that you're learning off of that recording. But at the same time, knowing the players and knowing who they are and what instrument they're on, that's very important. Because let's say you're transcribing and you're like, oh, I want to listen to Miles Davis, man. That was the best bass solo. No, no, that wasn't Miles Davis on bass. That's not Miles on bass. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? Like, you need to know who's who, the correct personnel. So when you're writing down these notable arrangements, it's important to have at least a minimum of three. Okay, just start with a minimum of three. Don't overload yourself with like 10 recordings. You know, think, oh man, I'm gonna go try to listen to all these. That's a waste of time. You're trying to do conscious effort when you're learning something here. So you don't want to sit there and waste time and waste valuable time spending there going through all these arrangements, and then, you know, you're not really extracting nothing from it. So start with just three, the bare minimum, a minimum of three. Three arrangements and recordings. Okay, so this should be in your first section. So whatever song you're learning, you're gonna recap real quick. You're gonna write down the name of the song. You're gonna write down its usual key signature for that tune, and then you're gonna write down notable arrangements and the recordings. Okay. All right. So let me move this over here. All right. So that's section two. So the next section, you want to write out the melody. Okay, now this is very important. Do not, I hope y'all see how serious I am, right? Okay, just want to make sure that you see how serious I am. Please do not go online and try to find yourself a real book lead sheet or some kind of configuration of a lead sheet. I'm gonna tell you right now, the internet has a lot of false information. You can assume that those changes that you found online in that PDF that was free has the correct changes. Maybe, maybe not. But what I would always refer to my students is, if you're gonna write down the melody, learn it off the recording, okay? And usually when you find the original recording, some of these recordings were pretty fast, so I know it's kind of hard to do transcriptions in that matter, but that's how we had to learn it, okay? And this is usually always the most easiest and effective way. Now, most of the real books, most of them, if they're updated, some are incorrect, some of the charts are correct, just depends on how well you know that chart. But you want to write the melody out yourself. You want to write the melody out. This is why you want to write the melody out subconsciously when you're doing, you're learning the song. Because if you don't know the melody to the song that you're playing, you don't really know the song. Because that's the whole, that structure is based around the melody. So if the melody has lyrics, for instance, you need to also know the lyrics. That is a melody. Because there is some kind of form of a notation, of a pitch notation that is attached to those, to that intervallic motion of the lyrics. So you got to understand that writing the melody out, you're learning the rhythm in real time. Okay, you're learning the harmony in real time. You're learning how the intervals fall into the existence of the chords in real time. So you're doing a lot of things subconsciously that you're not aware of because you're not consciously thinking about it right then and there. But that's what you're doing. That's what your brain is absorbing. That's what I meant by you have all this information you're taking in. So when you write the melody out, write it out in pencil, not in pen, okay? Write the whole entire melody out, okay? Then you wanna write the melody out in its original key. Like I stated earlier in the first slide, you want to write the song out, put the key signature on there, but you want to write the melody out in its original key signature. Then you want to write at the top, write any changes that may be specific to a particular recording written on a separate sheet. So don't write the chord changes on the same page as the melody. You want the melody just raw. Okay, because you just want to see the exoskeleton of that melody. You want to see how it moves. Does the phrase, is it an interval where it leaps? Okay, or is it doing just a lot of straight, more straight phrasing? Okay, these are things that you want to pay attention to, and it'll help you understand and learn the form. It'll help you learn how to resolve the phrasing or resolve a rhythm or resolve a harmony within the melody, etc. Okay, so you want to make sure that you write all of these things out. You want to write the chord changes on a separate sheet. Okay, I tell my students the best way to do this is sit at the piano and listen to the bass player. Okay, it's very hard when you listen to a recording that's moving very fast, right? And the piano player is either two things, either very skilled where they can fill up a lot and, you know, or they'll go very light comp and you don't hear them at all. So now you have this displacement of harmony that you don't know what's going on and everything is moving, but then you have something that's moving too much and then you can't keep up. So the best way to do it, the next second best instrument in the band that is more simplified to hear the harmony would be the bass player. So the bass player in the older recordings, if you listen to any most of the recordings from mid 30s up until the 50s, and I say up until the 50s because bebop was still in its newest formation, but in that time frame, a lot of these bass players were still doubling their quarter notes, and a lot of them were still playing root motion. And what I mean by that is they were resolving each phrase and each measure in the root motion. Now in the 50s and such, they broke away from that where they started to play and extend the harmony more in their bass lines. But before that, that's not the case. So when you're transcribing, you're trying to listen for chord changes and you don't know how to hear the chord, listen for the bass player's root motion. And most of the time, they'll outline the root or the fifth. So as long as you can hear that in between, and you'll hear if it's major or minor, that right there is a key. It's very distinctive if you hear a minor tonality versus a major tonality. That third is going to stick out like a sore thumb, right? So when you're writing out the chord changes on a separate sheet, write it to the best of your ability, okay? This is all a learning process. So this is why you want to write it in this original key so you know how to transpose it later, all right? So moving forward here. Oh, let me make sure. Okay, here we go. So the third section. Now the third section is important as well. This is the section where you're kind of doing the groundwork. All right. So the previous section, let me go back real quick. I didn't do a recap. The previous section here is you taking now you're taking the chart itself that you just wrote out the historical information. You wrote out the personnel. You did all that stuff. That's the paperwork. Now you're taking the bodywork. It was like, you know, we paint, you know, we're building a car, we're painting the car. Now we're stripping it. We're stripping the whole car apart. So in this case, you're taking everything off the page. The chord changes, the form, any repeats, embellishments, accents, all of the articulations, all of that. You're taking all that off. You're just starting with the melody, the exoskeleton of the entire tune. You're starting with the melody. Write the melody out. And also the part that I didn't mention in this section as well, you want to make sure to write the scale degrees of the melody on top of the notes. And the reason why I say that is if you want to transpose this song later, for instance, in another key signature, it's good to know the scale degrees and how it moves. So when you're having to think about like, okay, if I'm in the key of A, well, the first note starts on the fifth. So if I'm in the key of A, then I know my first note is going to be an E. You know, if that first fifth, if that's a scale degree, if it's the five of whatever that's in there of that chord, you see what I'm saying? So knowing that, knowing how to do that, writing that out first, so that way you know how that, you know how to do that later on. That's a great process, writing out the scale degrees on top of the melody. All right. And then taking it, once you take the melody, now you go to the second part. Like I just stated, you took everything off the page. Now what you're doing is you're taking the chords, and now you're taking a separate section. So in section three, you're gonna write out all the changes with the scales and the arpeggios that corresponds with them. Okay. So for instance, if it starts in C minor, if it's a C minor seven, okay, you got a Dorian chord here. Okay, so you're gonna write out the entire scale. I write it all the way up to the nine. Okay, to the ninth, and then you come back down, and then you write the arpeggio. And the reason why you want to learn it like this, you want to have it separated, is you want to learn it. And I always tell my students, write the chord, write the changes, kind of like if you were writing on a staff paper and you're writing your scales going down like this on the page. I would write all the changes in the order that the song is in. So as I'm practicing it, I'm hearing that harmony move as I'm moving down the page. And I can now get my ear associated every time I walk or when I solo, I'm thinking of that tonality, how it's moving. So writing out all the changes with the scales and the arpeggios that corresponds with them is going to be very helpful for your ear, and you're not having to sit there and think about what you actually have to play because you've written it out and you took the time to, you know, to hash through it and learn it. Okay, so then the second part of that in this section would be you're going to write out your own exercises to learn the changes faster. So for instance, I make all my bass students, really at the school, I make them do one exercise a week. I give them a piece out of one of their method books, and then I have them actually compose an exercise for themselves that they have to perform in studio class. And usually when I do that, and this is all in jazz, and usually when I do that, whatever tune that they're learning, they end up learning the changes a lot quicker because they're doing something that they're enjoying, that they wrote out. So now they're internalizing their own ideas. And that's the key. You want to internalize your own ideas by this process, by the process of shedding and exercising through those changes and playing up scales and etc. This is why, so you're not having to sit there and think about how you want to format it together. All right. And then last, you want to write out the entire form with just the chord changes in Roman numeral format. Now, this is the first part of what you learn. If you learn the blues form, you usually see it written out in Roman numeral. Reason being is if you're transposing it in another key signature, the Roman numeral is telling you what chord of that key signature that you need to play. So that same format will work as well on a standard that you're trying to learn. So writing out the Roman numeral in whatever in that format with the chord changes, that way you can and then test yourself by saying, I'm gonna give myself another key signature and let me see if I can transpose it based off of these Roman numerals. Okay. And understanding how that works, when you write it out, you get to see it. So once you see it and you're repeating it, and always say these things out loud as you're practicing, and don't kind of just go, no, say C minor seven, C, E flat, G, B flat, like say it out loud. See how quickly I was just able to just do that. That's how you want to do it. You want to do it that way. This is the section where you're going to learn and teach yourself how to go through that process in this order. Okay. And that's something that I, you know, kind of ideas and things that I take to try to go in that format. All right. So that's kind of a recap of what section three is like. So section four is where you get to the fun stuff, but the more harder information that you need to retain. So this is the section where you're going to transcribe the solo off the record, or, you know, or transcribe a solo off of the record that you're listening to, or whatever standard you're learning. Do not write out the solo until you have played it enough times with the recording. Okay, so don't even write it out yet. Don't try to find no online already pre-transcription. Nope, you're going to learn it by ear in real time. Don't use the amazing slowdown. Don't try to slow it down on YouTube. We already know all the tricks, folks. You got these fancy programs that you can do. You got Pro Tools, Logic, GarageBand. We know you can do it. I get it. It's easy. It's comfortable. It's comfortable. You know what I'm saying? It's comforting. However, you're not really learning anything. You're not teaching yourselves by cheating. And the way that I had to learn, and all the pros and all the greats that I've studied from and did it before me and before them, that was the process. Some was times was on the bandstand, and others you just listen to the record. You just have to keep rewinding it. And that's how you train your ear. So make sure you learn the solo and play with the recording. Make sure that you're able to retain all the information from the solo before transferring it to paper. Okay? Then you want to identify, learn, and write out specific elements, small phrases in the solo that you can sequence through every single key. Little fragments, little ideas, little motifs that you could take from the recording, things that you've heard other players do, or concepts that you've heard the rhythm section do. Like, for instance, if a rhythm section was, if you had this, that concept right there, if you were soloing, you do, bam, bam, bam. You see what I'm saying? Like, taking concepts. That's information. That may be information that you may not know is information, but that is information. Everything that you hear on a recording is information. Everything. There's nothing. When you making gumbo, you using all the ingredients. You're not leaving nothing out. You can't. You can't afford to leave nothing out, because then it's not gumbo. So you have to understand the information that you're taking, to identify the ideas that you like, but also identifying the concepts that you're hearing, and that you're hearing it in real time. That's how you're training your ear to pick these things up. Then you are able to write out those ideas. Then what you want to do from there is learn the song, learn the entire form of the song and how many sections are present. So at this point, now you're going back and you're just listening to the whole entire song in its formality. How many solos did they take? Who took a solo? Did this person come in the wrong section? You know what I'm saying? So it's information that you're teaching yourself. So if it happens on the bandstand in real time, you know how to react to it. These are things that you take when you're transcribing. It goes way beyond you going online and you downloading a PDF that someone already written out. They did the homework. Their homework may be right or wrong. You don't know that because you didn't do your homework first. So make sure when you transcribe, and go back to point A, the bullet point A here. Transcribe the solo. Do not write it out until you have played it enough times with the recording by yourself. Okay, that's what section four is for. So that next section, the only thing that should be on paper in that section should just be the little ideas that you are hearing. And then you want to take, at least starting off, for those of you who might be overwhelmed with, oh my God, I gotta write on all 12 keys, just start off with five keys. Just start off with five. That's it, just five. And don't always, and I always say this, have your, obviously, your easiest one, which will probably be C, but then you got your hardest one, which will be kind of like C sharp, D flat, you know, G flat, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So always give yourself a challenge, all right? But that's what section four would be entailing for your journal. And then lastly, I think this is my last one, maybe. You want to write down, here's the section where you want to write out the entire solo with the correct rhythms, notes, phrasing, and any other key elements that is present for what you're transcribing. Okay, you want to go back and proof it, you know. So before you, and by the way, The whole time you doing this, everybody, the whole time you doing this, at this whole section right here, when you're writing it out at this point, you should be singing along with the recording as you're writing it out. If you can sing it, you can play it. And as you're singing it, you're internalizing rhythm, right? You gotta be able to sing and understand how it feels. You get that by learning the solo, internalizing it, not reading it on the page first. You have to sit there and sing along with it. Get your body immersed into what you're dealing with, because it's a lot of information you're dealing with, and you're trying to conceptualize this information in a very however much time that you have to work on it, right? So you don't want to sit there and waste any time by just writing and you're not singing along. Like, you have to be doing three things at once. You got to be writing, singing, and then also looking, you know, reading along with your eyes, making sure that you visually know what you're conceptualizing, okay? And then the next part is you're going to write out any specific chord changes that you may hear during the solo, because sometimes a piano player or somebody might play something in the background, or you might hear these background harmonies. Like, sometimes horn players, I've heard them do that before. I've heard Blakey do this under bass solos. They did this on Crisis, I believe. Freddie Hubbard tuned, Blakey Band did that under Jimmy Mary's bass solo. He was soloing, you can hear the horns kind of like playing these long tones, but they're harmonizing underneath. Right? So things like that, like, oh, that's a nice harmony. What is that? Oh, so now you might sit at the piano and try to figure that out. And you're like, oh, I like that. So then what if you start your solo off with beep, beep, you know, whatever harmony they playing, you know, that's again, these are information. Then you want to write out five of your favorite ideas you hear from the actual solo. Okay. Now, what I told you to do before, You're taking information that you've heard from the record. This section, you're taking information that you've heard from the actual solo, okay? And then you wanna write these ideas out in all 12 keys, as I stated in the previous slide. And then lastly, you're gonna learn the entire solo again until it becomes part of your daily vocabulary. And what I mean by that is, I was gonna demonstrate here. But when you start to learn a solo, first, you know, you're going to pretty much do what Clark Terry said in his quote. You're going to imitate, assimilate, and then innovate. So you're gonna eventually imitate everything that you hear from these solos. You're like playing it verbatim. Like, that's exactly what you're doing. You're like, oh man, I feel weird because people are gonna try to say I sound like Charlie Parker playing Charlie Parker. Trust me when I tell you, on record, off record, I don't care how many records you quote me and put me on, you will never ever sound like Charlie Parker. Cause no one on this planet will never sound like Charlie Parker but Charlie Parker.
Freak.
So if you decide in that moment that you are going into this transcription thinking that you are going to come out sounding like Charlie Parker, you're going to have to do a whole lot of bad stuff to yourself to get to that point. And I'm pretty sure you don't want to torment yourself like that. So the smart thing we'll do is imitate the information you're hearing, and then we assimilate. So what you're doing is now you're processing, you're analyzing everything that you are taking, this stuff that you are imitating. And for some reason, over time, it starts to not sound like that anymore. It starts to sound like you playing it, because people are hearing you playing it. So then that third part to that quote, which would be to innovate, that's where your ideas start to merge with the information that you took on this slide that I'm showing you here. And that becomes what I like to call those two words, your daily vocabulary. That's what we're going for. So that's what this tune journal is going to prepare you for. That's what it's coming in together for. It's going to help you take all that information. If you go all the way from the beginning with what's the name of the tune, to now You know the tune so well, I can play all this bad stuff ripping right through it. And people are like, my God, what you do? And you, and now it's a process. So now you done took information, you've taken a step-by-step process of how you learn in songs, and you're gonna realize now it becomes easier over time. I'm not saying that jazz is easy. It is not, by any means. It's, to me, one of the hardest genres to play because it's so free. It's that free, because it's so free, because it's so liberated with the that you can be whatever it is that you want to be in that moment. And yet the few restrictions that do fall into place are just very theoretical restrictions, but formality and feeling and musicality of it is not, right? So the information that you learning off these records, the stuff that the process that you got to do to learn these tunes, that's going to pay off in the long run. So that's the end of my session, everybody. I hope that I've covered everything today and tried to give you guys an insight of what it takes to put together a tune journal, because it's not easy, you know, especially if you've never done one before. I would advise to just take two tunes. Start with two tunes that you actually know already, and then go through those steps. And then once you figure out what works for you, now I'm giving you tools and steps to follow and try. I'm not going to say that if you do this, oh man, you're going to come out on a silver horse. No, everybody's different. Everybody works different. Everybody practices different. Everybody thinks different. Everybody internalizes information different. So I cannot assume that how I would do it would work for you. But I do know that the information is the same. That information will work because that information is the same. That doesn't change. It's just the process of how you apply it. So with this tune journal, it's going to just teach you discipline. That's just another way of teaching yourself how to discipline your way of learning this music. So that's it. That's like the slide said. That's it. That's the end. That's boy, I feel like I could write a book right now. Whew.
Bishop Brandon Robertson. Thank you again for an awesome session. You know, one thing I really like that you said is be able to sing it and listen, you know, before you even start to write it. And one thing I've experienced with younger players, they're a little embarrassed by trying to sing something, but it is so very important, because when you ask players to sing, you can hear what's going to come out of their instrument, from rhythm to even, you know, how they're going to fluctuate a note, or how they're going to approach, you know, style and things like that. So singing, so very important. I'm glad you brought that point up. And, you know, for our listeners, don't forget, you can go back and rewind and watch this again, because he brought so many great nuggets today that maybe you were taking notes and, you know, you lost it. You got lost in there at some point. You can always go back and listen. But what have you experienced lately in your teaching, even with college students, as we know that you're a professor, is this something that they still struggle with, you know, with doing this tune journal and, you know, trying to listen and imitate? Or, you know, is this an ongoing thing for all musicians?
I think it's ongoing for all musicians, but at different levels, you know. I mean, even the guys that are at the top, I mean, you know, I mean, you talked a while back how Branford went to go back and still study classical, you know, to do something different from his years with, you know, with Jay Leno and with Sting and doing this stuff with his family, you know, it's there's musicians who I respect that challenge themselves, that keep furthering, to educate themselves in their idiom and what they're doing. But then also you have the younger generation that, like you said, like they're afraid to sing and whatnot. And I use this example in my methods class. I say, if you're going to get in front of a classroom and you want your class to respond back to you, if you say, class, say hi. Okay. Class, I need you to say hi, hi. Now, what just happened? In that moment, everybody subconsciously had to think about what just transpired here. He just told me, oh, okay, I guess I got to do it. It's just that instant moment of like gratification that you have to like be assertive of what you do. And so when I teach them about singing in jazz band, I'm that professor that is not afraid to embarrass you in that sense. Because especially if I know you're a music education major, like you're not going to sit there and tell me you're not going to sing in front of your class. You know how bad I sound singing in front of, do you know how many times I've sung in front of jazz band? Sounded terrible, terrible. Terrible. And I'm not a terrible musician. I'm not tone deaf. I know how to hit the pitches, but I'm just not a singer. I was hitting the pitches. I'm just not a singer. But the way I sung it, I wanted them to hear it how I wanted them to play it. I sung it how I wanted them to play it. And then I got on the bass and played it how I was singing it. And they were like, oh, yeah. And it has nothing to do with me being cocky. You're just really confident. No, I was once you. I was once you. I just finally figured out that every time one of my elders and my older teachers, everybody was telling me, they're like, if you can sing it, you can play it. And when it finally clicked, like, oh, they're right. It feels different when you think about every great singer or musician, when you feel what they do. Like, that's why people like Michael Jackson so much, man, because when Michael was doing his thing, there was feeling behind that. You know what I'm saying? He has some cracked notes. Come on, now. That ain't no groan. That's I'm trying to reach for the cracking, you know what I'm saying? But it's the feeling. So I teach my students, you know, you gotta, when you're learning something, I say, what is different from you getting in your car, driving to the store, you turn on your Apple Music or Spotify playlist, your song comes on, and you're singing at the top of your lungs, word from word. How many times did you have to listen to that song? Didn't you transcribe just there? You singing it how you want to hear it, how you want it to be heard, right? That's the same concept. I don't understand how that's no different. And when I usually say that to my students, that messes them up. They hate me for that. They're like, that's not cool, professor. But it's the truth. That's the same. You doing the same thing that you would do on your regular just time off just by yourself. What's the difference? So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
I believe that did answer my question, Professor. I love the analogy of Michael Jackson with the cracked notes. Mm-hmm. That was perfect. I'm going to rewind and listen to that part again. You know, we've had an awesome time today. And, you know, I mean, that last part you talking about demonstrating it, you know, and playing it for them. That's some of the best teaching I've received and also have seen out there when, you know, a teacher teach with their horn in their hand or their bass in their hand, or they'll hop on the drums, they'll sing it for them, they'll have the whole class singing. And then when they pick up the horns, they grab the instruments, now the music started to come alive. Mm-hmm. These are the nuggets that you get right here in the Clearwater Jazz Young Lion virtual sessions. And guess what? Mm-hmm. They're free. We're sharing knowledge here for free. Now, of course, it costs Professor Robertson, you know, he went to Florida State. It costs a lot of hours and, you know, thousands of dollars of education to get him where he is and in practice. But you get an inside scoop, you get a snapshot of getting that knowledge straight from the source. So we want you to go out and tell other people about what you're hearing here. You know, if you love Professor Robertson's sessions, why don't you email us over here, info@clearwaterjazz.com. Just say, I want more of Professor Brandon Robertson because I am learning a lot. If you like-
I hope so. Hear,
yeah, I was thinking that. If you want to hear more of me, guest host, hey, email over there, info@clearwaterjazz.com. We can have better ideas and greater sessions. It's all on you. So share. Don't be selfish. Okay. Come on, man. Check out www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. This has been a great session, and I can't wait till the next one. I'm your guest host, Michael Knodel, and your educator for the day has been Professor Brandon Robertson. And we want you to keep on swinging. We'll see you in the next one. Bye bye.
All right, guys. See y'all soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at MarineMax Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.